everyone. Welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5, 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network, and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on modern money mechanics. Remember Henry Ford? Henry Ford is the guy that said it is well enough that the people of this nation do not understand our banking and monetary system. For if they did, I believe there would be a revolution before tomorrow morning. That was Henry Ford, Sr., back in 1922. Henry Ford knew and understood the monetary system and the ramifications of that system, headed by and implemented by the Federal Reserve Bank system. Now remember, when Henry Ford was alive, the banking system, that is the Federal Reserve, just came into existence in 1914. So by the time he made that statement, only 8 years at best. 8 years. And that's the conclusion that he came to. A number of other senators and representatives throughout the years, not very many presidents have ever said anything about gold, silver, or money. Franklin Roosevelt did, but remember, he was the guy that wanted to sell modern money mechanics. He wanted to sell his paper money, the Communist Manifesto, communism, and he did. The people of America loved Franklin Roosevelt like the people of America loved Ronald Reagan. Both of them were consummate liars. Both of them were passionate socialists and communists. Ronald Reagan covered it by his acting. He was a great actor. He posed as a great conservative. Conservatives and conservative values and philosophies deal with hard money, balanced books, gold and silver. That wasn't what Ronald Reagan sold us. Franklin Roosevelt didn't lie about that. He was a liberal Democrat, and he said, what we need paper money. We need to abolish this gold and silver because there's this great emergency, this great economic collapse. And the reason that we have this great depression is because of gold. Gold did it to us. Well, the people of America bought that lie, and they said, well, if gold caused this great debacle, then what we need is a great president like Franklin Roosevelt. He's going to give us the medicine that we need, and he did. He did. Now, the truth to be known, we Americans have had a pretty high lifestyle from the 1930s on, starting about 1940, actually. We needed World War II to get us out of the Depression, and we did, and it provided that relief. And from 1945 until today, the year 2004, we've gone through some economic recessions, but we Americans have lived high on the hog. We have not seen a collapse of our economy like 1929, 1907, 1919. In other words, there's been some ups and downs, but nothing dramatic. The biggest, most dramatic collapse occurred in 1783, 1929, and is about to occur in the not-too-distant future. I say not-too-distant, but it gets worse and worse as time goes on. I thought the economy was going to collapse in 1973. I thought for sure by 79, 80, 81. I was a little more optimistic about 92, 93. I said, well, this looks like it's a recession, not a full-blown depression. Right now, it's nip and tuck. I'm not sure Alan Greenspan can pull the fat out of the fire, and I've been advising my students for many years to prepare for the worst and hope for the best. In other words, if the collapse comes and you have a four-year supply of toilet paper, there's one good thing. You're prepared for toilet paper. Now, in our household, we need 127 things. It's not 290 or 3,600. If you take a look around your house and your buying habits, I think you're going to find that there's about 100 things that you need to buy in stock. You know, like mustard, ketchup, sweet pickles. You might need some wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. I recommend here for our students in subsistence and survival that you maintain a four-year supply, a little over half of what Joseph was instructed to stockpile back in the Great Famine period in Egypt. Do you remember that? We Americans have been playing the role of the prodigal son over the last 75 years, and now it's about to come home to roost. Hang on, I'll be right back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10, it says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Private business is carried on in gold and silver coin to this day, but public business is conducted in commercial paper, like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there was no difference in the value of gold and silver coin in clad coin and currency. And you know that's true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in purchasing power between gold and paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper money. Now, you know, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew, and they knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. And they knew full well back in 1933 that in order to subjugate us, the free people, they would first have to take away our gold and silver coin, to take away our right to own property, and to destroy our property rights. And they did. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, duties, capacities, then you and I must first regain our property and property rights. And that's because property is the legal foundation of all of our liberties. So let me teach you how to do just that. You know, this business school is now on compact disc for adult home school. If you'd like more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's free. So why don't you call and order yours today? It's free of charge. Call now. The number 417-273-4967. My business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, why don't you go to the website? It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request or call direct 417-273-4967. Ron Paul, on September the 5th, 2003, delivered a pretty extensive message to the House of Representatives concerning gold and silver coin, hard money versus soft. I interjected the Figge report last time. Now let's pick it up right there with Ron Paul, who said, though generally accepted by most modern economists and politicians, there is little hesitancy in accepting the omnipotent wisdom of the Federal Reserve to know the price of money, the interest rate, and its proper supply. For decades now, and especially during the 1990s when Chairman Greenspan was held in such high esteem and no one dared question his judgment or the wisdom of the system, this process was allowed to run unimpeded by political or market restraints. Just as we must eventually pay for our perpetual deficits, continuous manipulation of interest and credit will also extract a final payment. Artificially low interest rates deceive investors into believing that rates are low because savings are high and represent funds not spent on consumption. When the Federal Reserve creates bank deposits out of thin air, making loans available at below market rates, malinvestment and overcapacity results, setting the stage for the next recession or depression. The easy credit policy is welcomed by many. Stock market investors, home builders, home buyers, congressional spendthrifts, bankers, and many other consumers who enjoy borrowing at low rates and not worrying about how to repay it. However, perpetual good times cannot come from a printing press or easy credit created by a Federal Reserve computer. The piper will demand payment, and the downturn in the business cycle will see to that. The downturn is locked into place by the artificial boom that everyone enjoys, despite the dreams that we have ushered in this new economic era. Let there be no doubt. The business cycle, the stagflation, the recessions and depressions and the inflations are not a result of capitalism and sound money, but rather they are the direct result of paper money and a central bank that is incapable of managing it. Unsound money is our problem. And our current monetary system makes it tempting for all parties, individuals, corporations, and governments to go into debt. It encourages consumption over investment and production. Incentives to save are diminished by the Fed's making new credit available to everyone and keeping interest rates on savings so low that few find it advisable to save anything for a rainy day. And this is made worse by taxing interest earned on savings. It plays havoc with those who do save and want to live off of their interest. The artificial rates may be 4, 5, or even 6% below the market rate, and the savers, many who are elderly and on fixed income, suffer unfairly at the hands of Alan Greenspan, who believes that restoring or resorting to money creation will solve our problems and give us perpetual prosperity. Lowering interest rates at times, especially early in the stages of monetary debasement, will produce the desired effects and stimulate another boom-bust cycle. But eventually, the distortions and imbalances between consumption and production and the excessive debt prevent the monetary stimulus from doing very much to boost the economy. Just look at what's been happening in Japan for the past 12 years. When conditions get bad enough, the only recourse will be to have major monetary reform to restore confidence in the system. Now, the two conditions that result from fiat money that are more likely to concern the people are inflation of prices and unemployment. In Argentina, they have both high unemployment and high inflation. Unfortunately, very few people realize these problems are directly related to our monetary system. Instead of demanding reforms, the chorus from both the left and the right is for the Fed to do more of the same, only do it faster. If our problem stems from easy credit and interest rate manipulation by the Fed, demanding more interest rate manipulation and more easy credit will not do anything to help. Sadly, it will only make our problems worse. Ironically, the more successful the money managers are at restoring growth or prolonging the boom with their monetary machinations, the greater are the distortions and imbalances in the economy, the greater the fall and the more severe the day of reckoning will be. This means that when corrections are eventually forced upon us, they're going to be much more painful, and more people are going to suffer with the correction, and the correction is going to last a lot longer. Now, let's look at today's conditions. Today's economic conditions reflect a fiat monetary system held together by many tricks and luck over the past 30 years. The world has been awash in paper money since removal of the last vestige of the gold standard by Richard Nixon when he buried the Bretton Woods Agreement, the gold exchange standard, on August 15, 1971. Since then, we've been on a worldwide paper dollar standard. Quite possibly, we're seeing the beginning of the end of that system. If so, tough times are ahead for the United States and indeed for the entire world economy. A paper monetary standard means there are no restraints on the printing press or on federal deficits. In 1971, the M3 money supply was $776 billion. Today, it stands at $8.9 trillion. Now, that's an 1,100% increase. Our national debt in 1971 was $408 billion. Today, it stands at $6.8 trillion. That's a 1,600% increase. Now, since that time, our dollar has lost 80% of its purchasing power since 1971. Now, common sense tells us that this process is not sustainable and something has to give. So far, no one in Washington seems interested. I just wanted to tell you. Although dollar creation is ultimately the key to its value, many other factors play a part in its perceived value, such as the strength of our economy, our political stability, our military power, the benefit of the dollar being the key reserve currency of the world, and the relative weakness of other nations' economies and their currencies. Now, for all of these reasons, the dollar has enjoyed a special place in the world's economy. Increases in productivity have also helped to bestow undeserved trust in our economy, with consumer prices to some degree being held in check and fooling the people at the urging of the Fed that inflation is not a problem. Trust is an important factor in how the dollar is perceived. Sound money encourages trust, but trust can come from those and other sources as well. But when this trust is lost, which always occurs with paper money, given enough time, the delayed adjustments can hit with a vengeance, as they did in the 1929 to 1937 cycle with the Great Depression. Now, following the breakdown of the Bretton Woods Agreement, the world essentially accepted the dollar as a replacement for gold, to be held in reserve upon which even more monetary expansion could occur. It was a great arrangement that up until now seemed to make everyone happy. Now, we own the printing press and create as many dollars as we please. These dollars are used to buy federal debt. This, then, allows our debt to be monetized, and the spendthrift Congress, of course, finds this a delightful convenience, and it never complains, because they use this ever-expanding dollar base to shower more benefits and pork projects over their districts to buy votes to be reelected. As the dollars circulate through our fractional reserve banking system, they expand many times over. With our excess dollars at home, our trading partners are only too happy to accept these dollars in order to sell us their products. And because our dollar is relatively strong compared to other currencies, we can buy foreign products at a discounted price. In other words, we get to create the world's reserve currency at no cost to us. We get to spend it overseas. We get to receive manufactured goods from China in return. Our excess dollars go abroad, and other countries, especially Japan and China, are only too happy to loan them right back to us by buying our government and GSE debt. Up until now, both sides have been very happy with this arrangement. But you know, all good things must come to an end. And this arrangement is ending. You see, the process has put us into a position of being a huge debtor nation, with our current account deficit of more than $600 billion per year, now exceeding 5% of our gross domestic product. We now owe foreigners more than any other nation ever owed in all of history. It's more than $3 trillion. Yeah, that's right. We owe a national debt, which is also owned mainly by foreigners, people from overseas. Our Federal Reserve owns 40% of that debt. Japan owns 23%. Other foreign nations own fractionally proportionate parts of our national debt. 60% of it's owned by somebody other than our Federal Reserve. And we owe another $3 trillion. So add 7 and 3 together, that's $10 trillion. That's as much as our gross domestic product. Our GDP is about $10 trillion a year. Okay, so you say, well, I make $40,000 a year, and I've got a total debt of $40,000, and I can service that debt. But you'd have to agree, would you not, that if you were comparing your income of $40,000 a year and your debt with $40,000 with mine, I have $40,000 a year in income, and I have no debt. who would be the stronger of the two? Who would have the greater economic leverage over the other? So a debt of this sort always ends by the currency of the debtor nation decreasing in value, and that's what started to happen with the dollar. Although it still has a long way to go, our free lunch cannot last forever. Printing money, buying foreign products, and selling foreign holders of dollars our debts ends when the foreign holders of all of this debt become concerned with the dollar's future value. Now, how would you like to be working for $10,000 a year and saving $1,000 of it, 10%, and you put it in the bank at 1% interest? And inflation runs 8% a year, so that next year, when you go to spend this $1,000, they paid you $10, so you've got $1,010, but it will only buy $920 worth of goods. Because prices continually go up, your purchasing power continuously goes down. How much would you want to save? Now put yourself in the place of China, Japan, the Philippines, Singapore, or these other third world poor nations. And ask those people to take your paper for delivery of hard goods like tennis shoes, basketballs, and automobiles. What they're saying in effect is, yes, we'll work for 14 cents an hour, we will take your American dollars, and someday, when we've saved enough American dollars, we want to go into the marketplace and we want to buy something. Say we want to buy tennis shoes. And when they come to buy tennis shoes or something else that we manufacture here in the United States, something that we make, what they worked for $1,000 to achieve only buys $920 worth of goods. They've suffered an $80 loss. What happens when hyperinflation comes in and they're losing 5,000% a year? Do you think these people are going to take our dollars and continue sending us Toyotas, tennis shoes? No, sir. I don't believe it. Nobody has ever done that in the past, unless these people are totally crazy, which I would submit to you at this moment in time, they're probably suffering from some form of lunacy. But what happens when it actually hits home? I mean, it's only speculative right now. Now remember, in the 1970s, we had less than $1 trillion worth of money in circulation. Today we got $9 trillion. And President Bush is working hard. Now remember, this speech was made September the 5th. The president was expanding the money supply by 25% last year and 30% this year. The goal is to expand the money supply to $13 trillion by the end of 2005. You know, every time you put a dollar into circulation, it makes the dollars that are already in circulation cheaper, doesn't it? That discourages then anybody from wanting to save. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour. And editorial review, The Law Hour, and editorial review is brought to you by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider. An insider like John Swinton, for instance. He was the former editor of the New York Tribune. Here's what he said to the New York Press Association back in February of 1936. He said, quote, "There's no such thing as a free and independent press in America unless it's in some country town. And there's not one of you who dares express an honest opinion because you know beforehand it would never appear in print." Now, I paid $150 a week for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with. And others of you are paid for doing similar things. Now, if I should permit my honest opinions to be printed in one issue of my paper, like Othello, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. Our business, he said, is to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his race and his country for his daily bread. We are, he said, the tools of rich men, behind the scenes. We are intellectual prostitutes. Unquote. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of the Global 2000 program and the New World Order. Men and families like the Windsors, the Rockefellers, the Bushes, Bundys, Carnegies, Vanderbilts, and Kissingers. That's why I contend it's time for us to wise up, boys and girls, and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let you and I prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000 and Bible prophecy and this New World Order, why don't you call and order my 4-hour compact disc package? It's educational, entertaining, informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call right now. The number's 417-273-4967 to order your free General Law CD package. Remember, that's 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me your email request. Do that right now before you forget. Click onto the email. Send me an email request for your General Law CD package, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. Ron Paul, probably the only guy in the Congress that I know of that has his head screwed on straight. We had a few in there that had their head screwed on straight over the years, but I think he's the last one. I don't know what you people in Texas are thinking of sending somebody to Congress who's espousing hard money. Surely you people in Texas that are the voters in Ron Paul's district don't believe this nonsense and propaganda that you hear from Ron Paul telling you that you should change your monetary system, get on the gold standard, and abolish the Federal Reserve and do away with the income tax and do away with soft money. Well, for some reason, you keep sending him back to Congress. More power to you. I'm glad to see that there's at least one guy there that isn't totally insane. The rest of the congressmen, the rest of the senators, well, at least according to Harry Figge, don't know whether their rectums are bored or punched. Dick Armey said he didn't know that. I find that hard to believe. I think he said that because he knew how bad it was and didn't want to admit that he's a part of the problem. You see, we look at our Congress and we say, gee, these people are really dumb. They can't balance the budget. They can't control spending. These people aren't dumb. You don't get to be president of the United States by being dumb. You don't get to be a senator like Ted Kennedy or Hillary or any of these power brokers in Washington by being dumb. What you do is you sell out to the international bankers and you get paid very handsomely. These people live well, thank you. They're certainly not patriots and they're certainly not thinking about you and I. They're not thinking about the long-term health and vitality of our economy or of our nation. Now, once this process starts, Ron Paul tells us, interest rates will rise, and in the recent weeks, despite the frantic effort of the Fed to keep interest rates low, they're actually rising instead. The official explanation is that this is due to an economic rebound with an increase in demand for loans, yet a decrease in demand for our debt and reluctance to hold our dollars is a more likely cause. Only time will tell whether the economy rebounds to any significant degree, but one must be aware that rising interest rates and serious price inflation can also reflect a weak dollar and a weak economy. The stagflation of the 1970s baffled many conventional economists, but not the Austrian economists. Many other countries have in the past suffered from the extremes of inflation in an inflationary depression, and we're not immune from what happened here or from that happening here. You see, our monetary and fiscal policies are actually conducive to just such a scenario. And a debt of this sort always ends by the currency of the debtor nation decreasing in value. That's what's happening to us right now. Printing money, buying foreign products, and selling foreign holders of dollars, our debt ends when the foreign holders of this debt become concerned with the future value of the dollar. In the short run, the current system gives us a free ride. Our paper buys cheap goods from overseas, and foreigners risk all by financing our extravagance. But in the long run, we will surely pay for living beyond our means. Debt will be paid, and it will be paid for one way or another. An inflated currency always comes back to haunt those who enjoy the benefits of inflation, although this process is extremely dangerous. It's a slow death, but it's a certain death. And many economists and politicians do not see it as a currency problem and are only too willing to find a villain to attack. So, surprisingly, the villain is often the foreigner who foolishly takes our paper in the first place for useful goods and accommodates us by loaning the proceeds back to us. Now, it's true that the system encourages exportation of jobs as we buy more and more foreign goods, but nobody understands the Fed role in all of this. So the cries go out to punish the competition with tariffs. Protectionism is a predictable consequence of paper money inflation, just as is the impoverishment of an entire middle class. It should surprise no one that even in the boom phase of the 1990s, there were still many people who became poorer. Yet all we hear are calls for more government mischief to correct the mischief and the problems with tariffs that were created by the Fed to begin with. And then give us increased welfare for the poor. Increase the minimum wage. We need increased unemployment benefits. We need more deficit spending. And we need special interest tax reduction. None of these things can solve the problems ingrained in a system that operates with paper money and a central bank. History is replete with the carcasses of the empires of the past who have embarked upon this foolish course. We're not immune from the same diseases and from the same penalties that these people experienced in the past. If inflation were equitable and treated all classes the same, it would be less socially divisive. But while some see their incomes going up above the rate of inflation, such as movie stars, CEOs, stockbrokers, speculators, professional athletes, others see their incomes stagnate, like lower middle income workers, retired people, and farmers. And likewise, the rise in the cost of living hurts the poor and the middle class more than the wealthy. And that's because inflation treats certain groups unfairly. So as a consequence, we see anger and envy, which are directed toward those who have benefited. The long-term philosophical problem with all of this is that the central bank and the fiat paper money system are never blamed. Instead, the free market capitalism is blamed. Hard money, gold and silver, savings is all blamed for this debacle. That's what happened in the 1930s. The Keynesians who drew up domestic economic thinking they grew up to dominate the economic thinking in the 1930s, they erroneously blamed the gold standard, balanced budgets, and capitalism instead of tax increases, tariffs, and Fed policy. This country cannot afford another attack on economic liberty similar to what followed the 1929 crash. That ushered in the economic interventionism and inflationism, which we have been saddled with ever since. These policies have brought us to the brink of another colossal economic downturn, and you and I need to be prepared for it. That's all. Now, here at the law school, we teach a class on subsistence and survival. During the 1920s, you needed to be prepared. You needed to be protected from the economic debacle of the 1930s. Some people were prepared. Some people, most people, were not. Those that were not prepared for it suffered through it. Those that were prepared for it profited from it. Depressions are immensely profitable opportunities for those that are prepared. For instance, right now the price of land in my local area is around $2,000 an acre. It goes up from there as high as $10,000, $2,000 to $10,000 an acre. This land here 20 years ago was selling for around $200 to $1,000 an acre. You know, it's just gone up about 10 times over the last 20 years to keep pace with inflation. It's probably higher priced than the inflation of the same 20-year period. Now, watch what happens. Let's not go out and buy $2,000 to $10,000 an acre land. Instead, let's save gold coin. And when the inflationary stagflation and the hyperinflation sets in, and people can no longer meet their payments, they lose their jobs. In Argentina, you have inflation running at 60% a year. This inflation drives the price of goods up. The Argentine peso has collapsed, so they're on a COD basis. If you want to buy tennis shoes from China, the Chinese require that you pay for them in hard money. Cash. Cash on the barrelhead. No credit. Argentine money is worthless. So as a result, the Argentines face higher and higher prices of the goods that come into their country. And since the unemployment rate is around 60%, 60% unemployment, then those people that are unemployed will take a look at you working for $10 an hour and say to your employer, but I'll do the same job for $9 an hour. Another unemployed guy comes by and says, you're paying this guy $9 an hour, I'll do it for $8. Another guy comes along and says, gosh, you're paying this guy $8, I'll do it for $7, $6, $5, $4, $3. So what you see is a continuing fall in the demand for labor, a continuing fall in the wages paid for that labor, a continuing increase in the prices of goods and services, and the obliteration of the middle class. They're gone. You only have rich and poor now. The rich deal in American dollars and euros, the poor deal in euros, or excuse me, deal in Argentine pesos. The rich are dealing in the euros and the dollars. And the poor, the middle class, the old people that used to rely upon their national currency, the Argentine peso, are still using that Argentine peso, and it is driving them to poverty. Driving nothing, they're already driven to poverty. So what would happen now if you took your dollars that you now have and converted those to gold? When this event transpires, you will be sitting here with the hard money, able to take advantage of the poor, the enfeebled, those that weren't prepared, who are now selling their land, selling their cars, selling their chattels, selling everything and anything that they have to survive, to put bread on the table. And here you are, taking advantage of these poor people with your hard money. That's what happened in the 1929 to 37 depression in the United States. Bernard Baruch, among thousands of other insiders, sold, converted to gold, came back into the marketplace. They sold their stocks at $270 a share and came back in and bought it in 1935, bought it back for $5 a share. I say it's time to grow up and wake up. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour. The Law Hour, an editorial review, is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and this New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood. And that's not just my opinion. You know, Jesus of Nazareth held the same view when he said in Matthew 24, verse 22, that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Now, it's time that you and I get wise and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. You know, like these Ted Kennedys, Arlen Specters, Hillary, and that guy John in the Justice Department, I say it's time for us to wake up and let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. To do just that, why don't you call, write, or email the law school and ask for my free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call right now the number 417-273-4967. And my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to the website at georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for that free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or you can call direct. It's 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about Ron Paul, Modern Money Mechanics. That's what we're practicing, and you can get a copy from your Federal Reserve Bank. Just write a letter to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. I think that's all the address you're going to need, Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And they're going to send you a little booklet called Modern Money Mechanics. You're going to love it. In fact, if you'd asked for the story of foreign trade and exchange, I'll bet you they'll send you that funny book. The story of banks and thrifts, Federal Reserve Bank of New York, another funny book. The story of consumer credit, another funny book. The history of inflation, another funny book. Once Upon a Dime, all published by the Federal Reserve Bank in full color. Cartoons, full color comic books to explain to you modern money mechanics. It's the real deal, folks. I'm not kidding you. I've got them right here on my desk. Now, what the Federal Reserve is selling is unjust weights and balances, which are prohibited by God Almighty in the Mosaic Law at Leviticus 19, 35 and 36, Deuteronomy 25, 16 or 13 through 16. Thou shalt not steal, Exodus 20. There are laws in the Bible given to us thousands of years ago where God told us, don't do that. In 1913, we woke up and said, you know, God's stupid, doesn't know what he's talking about, and we're going to do it. And we did. Now, of course, we're living with the legacy of that decision. Ron Paul, on September 5th, 2003, made an address before the House of Representatives, and he said, boys and girls, stand by, listen up, let me tell you how this deal's going to come down. He did. I listened. I'm reporting it to you. Big business and banking deserves our harsh criticism. But not because they're big or because they make a lot of money. Our criticism should come because of the special benefits that these corporations and banks receive from our monetary system designed to assist the business class at the expense of the working class. Labor leader Samuel Gompers understood this principle of monetary affairs and feared paper money, and he feared the central bank while arguing the case for gold. Since the monetary system is used to finance deficits that come from war expenditures, the military-industrial complex is a strong supporter of the current monetary system. The labor union and labor union leaders today support this soft money system. Labor leaders 100 years ago supported hard money because hard money is the backbone of an economy that is predicated upon labor. And if you're going to be a laboring man, wouldn't you like to have some backbone in your labor? We call that gold coin. It's the businessmen, boys and girls, that convinced us that we wanted paper money in a central bank, not the laboring men. Today, the laboring men have bought the argument that soft money and world trade and free and open trade worldwide is good for America, while they outsource your jobs to India, boys and girls, while they export your manufacturing industries and jobs to China, boys and girls. This is wonderful for Walmart. You can see it in their financial statements year after year. This is a great program for Walmart, General Motors, and Ford. But how in the hell can we justify this as being something good for American and American workers working at Walmart for $8 an hour? No, sir, boys and girls. The problem isn't in trade and trade policies. The problem is in the soft money. We've got plenty of gold here in America. There's plenty of it left in the ground. There aren't very many gold mines or gold miners in America. We should have tens of thousands of people out here digging gold out of the ground and expanding our money and monetary supply through labor, not by divine fiat orchestrated by the chairman of the Federal Reserve for the benefit of Walmart and General Motors. Now, of course, we're not going to change anything by beating our gums here, but you know, you can change a whole lot for yourself and your own family. I'm the only guy in Ozark County that practices gold and silver. I'm the only guy around that isn't complaining about inflation. I'm not complaining about the banks and Walmart and $8 an hour slave labor and $14 an hour slave wages in China. After all, if that's what Americans want to buy, you're certainly entitled to it. But I think I'm going to side with Ron Paul on this one. I'm going to side with Edwin Vieira on this one. I don't think soft money is the solution to our problems. I think it's the cause of our problem. I don't think we're going to solve this problem of exporting our jobs to India and our manufacturing industries to China by printing more cheap dollars. But hey, listen, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. Why don't you continue on with this program? Report back to me in 10 or 15 years and let me know how it turned out for you. Meanwhile, I'm going to get off these paper dollars and paper investments. I'm going to get out of the banks. I'm going to concentrate on labor, hard work, I'm going to concentrate on converting my labor to hard money. And in 10 or 15 years from now, let you and I compare notes and see which one of us fared out the best. I'm going to avoid debt like I avoid AIDS, herpes, and VD. You go ahead and take on more debt and stimulate the economy. It'll be good for General Motors, it'll be good for Ford, and it'll be good for Walmart. After all, two-thirds of our economy in America is predicated upon consumer and consumerism. I don't think I'll consume more than I can pay for. I think I'll live within my means. I think I'll save half of everything I create and produce. I learned that from an old Portuguese fella who came over here in 1922 with $5 in his pocket and checked out in 1970 with an estate of over $1 million. Yeah, he practiced hard money, hard work. And when he got all through, he had something to show for it. Americans today have a $70,000 consumer debt, plus a mortgage. I don't think old Frank would have appreciated or approved of that program. Now, liberals foolishly believe that they can control the prices in the process and curtail the benefits going to corporations and banks by increasing the spending for welfare and the poor, but it never happens. Powerful financial special interests control our government spending process, and they throw crumbs to the poor. The fallacy with this approach is that the advocates fail to see the harm done to the poor. With cost of living increases and job losses that are a natural consequence of monetary debasement, therefore even more liberal control over the spending process can never compensate for the great harm done to the economy and the poor by the Federal Reserve's effort to manage an unmanageable fiat monetary system. Now, this year, 2004, the government gave you retirees on welfare, a 3.4% cost of living increase. Inflation is running 8%. You lost 5% coming out of the chute. And yet, you people that are drawing these Social Security checks are some of the greatest champions of soft money. Well, all right. You know, when God told us not to use soft money, not to use unjust weights and balances, he wasn't whistling Dixie through a straw hat. He had a reason for telling us that. Now, we didn't listen, and as a result of that, there has to be a penalty to pay. My point in bringing you this series of programs is to show you that when these events transpire, you will then know and understand, here's the penalty that I'm paying for the violation of that law. Now, every time you make your house payments, you're paying a penalty for the usury. I remember my granddad one time back in 1949, he bought a house, $5,000. Paid a down payment. I don't remember what the down payment was, but the payments were $50 a month. The very first payment at $46 worth of interest and $4 worth of principal, and that thing amortized over, I don't know, 15, 20 years, something like that. So that when he got through paying for that house, he was going to buy one for himself and one for the banker. Actually, it was one for himself and 1.3 for the banker. That's the penalty that we all pay when we pay interest. When you sign a note and you agree to pay the interest, that's what you're doing. Now, if you want to pay that penalty, you go ahead. But it would seem like to me that if we saved our money first and then pay cash for that house, we could buy one house for ourselves, and later on we could buy a second house for ourselves, not the banker. So I started in on that project, and I find that it's more advantageous for me to save my money and then go out and buy a house, and then rent that house and own it free and clear. I don't have to have $1,000 a month rent to pay that mortgage to the bank. If the prices deflate from $1,000 a month to $300 a month, what the hell, I own the house free and clear. I can lower the rent to $300. I can compete with you. You've got to get $1,000 a month rent to service your debt. I don't have any debt. I can service and make a $300 a month profit off of my house. You know, Americans used to think like that. We used to act like that. We used to perform like that. 100 years ago, our forefathers, my great-granddad, Abe Snyder, was buying houses, building houses, and owning them free and clear. He owned a great portion of Westport, California. He owned the waterworks. He died in 1947. He was a very wealthy man. He owned a lot of houses, owned a lot of land. He'd been in the cattle business. His father came across the plains and his dad was shot in the arm with an Indian arrow. He lost the use of his left arm somewhere in Nebraska coming across the plains. That was back in the 1872. You know, those old timers, for some reason or another, they could use gold and silver coin, come across the plains, get shot in the arm, settle someplace, go to work, and make enough money to buy several houses, a ranch, own it all free and clear. Why is it that Americans today are in debt? Why don't we own houses free and clear? Why don't we own lands and ranches free and clear? Why don't we have great wealth? You know, that was promised to us by Moses. Under the terms of the Old Covenant, one of the 33 benefits that we're entitled to, you can read about it yourself in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, first 15 verses, gives you the benefits. You're entitled to great wealth. If you don't have great wealth, there's something going here. Americans don't have great wealth. It isn't just the poor, it's the middle class. Even you wealthy people, even the lawyers, the doctors, the people with degrees after their names, titles, are in debt. These are people that live in $500,000 houses and have financial statements that say they have $250,000 in debt and $250,000 in assets. Now enter in a depression, enter in a deflation, enter in stagflation, enter in inflation. And what happens? You can't make your payments. You lose your job. You don't make your payments, they take your house. You don't make your payments, they take your SUV. And we call that wealth in America today? Oh no. Now in the old days, the founding fathers, from 1787 to 1950, people believed in paying their debts, they believed in work, they believed in hard money. And we had it. We practiced it. We became the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world from 1787 to 1900. In 113 years, America displaced Great Britain. 13 backward colonies came to become the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world. We could boast that we, of the 15 economic indicators of industrial production, we Americans were number one in all 15. Today, in 2004, we are no longer number one in any of the 15 leading economic indicators of industrial production. And that's come upon us in just 54 years. 150 years to build it up and 54 years to squander it. I say it's time to make a turnaround. I say it's time that you and I start thinking hard money. So does Ron Paul. Hey, we're about out of time. We're going to have to leave it right there. I'll be back again tomorrow night with more on the Ron Paul story, along with Edwin Vieira, the guy that wrote Pieces of Eight. You've been listening to The Law Hour and the Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week on Truth Radio Network and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events, and we bring it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Hey, there's the signal. It says my time is up. I'll have to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, God willing, same time, same station. So until then, good night, friends.